Hey everybody, it's Greg here at the Mardi Verdor night. I'm standing in the fan courtyard in front of the Prudential Center where there are already fans mulling around at like 3:40 something, which is pretty impressive. And their fans line up inside as well, which is pretty impressive. Speaking of Inside the Rock, a weird thing happened today where I thought that me and Merrick were not going to be able to connect. If you listened to MBSW already today, you know that we did. We were able to kind of do a little phoner thing. Probably wasn't the best audio quality, but it's what you expect. I mean, luckily, I don't think either of our phones dropped off during the show, so that in itself was an improvement over the usual product. But it left me in kind of a lurch because me and Dan Rosen of NHL.com sat down and talked about the FNUF trade, and it was going to run in front of our interviews with Jacques Lemaire and Marty Brodeur. But alas, Merrick, well, not alas, I'm happy as hell Merrick was there. Alas, the Rosen interview couldn't be fit into the main show. So here's a bonus episode of Merrick versus Wyshynski. Me and Dan Rosen kind of going over the FNUF trade and the specifics of it for about 10 or 12 minutes. It's good stuff. Rosen's one of the smartest dudes in the business. And if you listen to this and listen to the other podcast, you can try to find out which ideas I stole from him about this trade. Anyways, thanks for listening, everybody. Back on Wednesday for more fun and games and hockey goodness. And thanks to Dan for helping me out and bailing me out, even though I didn't actually need him. Here's me and Dan Rosen on FNUF.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
So there has to be a standard version of red and blue. What is the actual shade of colors of the red and blue lines in the NHL? Yeah.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Why don't they sell that specific shade labeled blue line blue and red line
NHL
red
blue
for hockey fans?
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
There are so many colors in the rain.
Well, hey everybody, it's your old friend Greg here in the bowels of the Prudential Center as we prepare for a momentous evening, the number retirement ceremony of Marty Brodeur, which in true Lou Lamoriello fashion is now a footnote to the rest of the day's news involving the Dion Phaneuf trade from the Leafs to the Ottawa Senators, a Battle of Ontario trade, if you will. And I'm here with NHL.com's Dan Rosen, our good friend, to talk about a great many things as we kick off the show. Coming up later, by the way, a Jacques Lemaire interview and a Marty Brodeur interview, because, you know, today's just a normal day where we get to talk to these people and not like, you know, Chris Johnston for the fifth time in a week. Hi, Dan.
Hey, what's going on? Bowel, I'm sitting in a very comfortable chair in the bowels of this arena.
I like this arena because I can find all the things easily. I sometimes go to other arenas, like Brooklyn, for example. I still don't know where the hell I'm supposed to go. Every time I try to find a way into that arena, it's a different press entrance. I feel like it's like the disappearing castle from the movie Krull.
And it's also like the press entrance area is all under construction, so you're walking under scaffolding as well. It's a quite interesting building. This one's way easier, obviously, to get into.
My last time in Brooklyn, my favorite part was when I entered the press, what I thought was the press entrance, and then went through security, and then someone yelled at me from a doorway over, saying, no, this is the press entrance. And it was literally 7 feet away from the area where I came in, and I had to go back through security, which I thought was very interesting. But that's a different
area. That's Brooklyn.
That's Brooklyn, right. Dion Phaneuf trade. So what are the particulars of this trade again? We got Phaneuf.
All right, Phaneuf goes to Ottawa with Matt Fratton, Casey Bailey, Ryan Rupert, and Cody Donaghy, a prospect, defensive prospect. And Toronto gets Jared Cowan, Colin Greening, Milan Mihalik, Tobias Lindberg, I almost said Lindholm, Tobias Lindberg, and Ottawa's second-round pick in 2017. If you got all that, 9 players and 1 draft pick.
And again, the really remarkable thing about this, as Toronto continues to clear the decks salary-wise, the Kessel trade, finding somehow to take David Clarkson off the books, and now this FNUF trade, as in this FNUF trade, no money retained. It's the full $7 million going on the Ottawa books.
But if you think about it, too, you have to look at it the other way. There's no money retained, but actually Toronto, for next season, well, the remainder of this season and next season, they take back more salary than FNUF. With Greening and Mihalik and Cowan, they're making combined more than Dion FNUF is making. But this is not about next season for Toronto, and the cap they're not saving for next season. This is about the $7 million they saved from 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21 that now you would expect goes to somebody else, a big ticket free agent ad, and who could that be? leave that up to you.
Well, let's let's talk about the gigantic blonde goal scoring elephant in the room. The thing about Stamkos that really fascinates me now is, okay, they've cleared the decks, they're going to have salary, but like the thing I can't deal with here with the Stamkos stuff is, doesn't he want to win a cup?
Yeah.
Like, isn't the goal to, in your most productive years, go someplace where you know you're going to win? It's great that they have a blank slate there. It's great that the palette is clear and they could maybe, you know, pick up an Auston Matthews or somebody in this draft this year. But if you're Steven Stamkos, like, are you looking at this Leafs team and saying, how long? Like, there are absolutely no guarantees in Toronto for a guy like Stamkos, even with the big brains that are running the organization, that team is going to be able to contend within 3 years.
I 100% agree with you. And that's why, you know, it is the storyline. Stamkos at this point is the storyline of like, oh, well, they're clearing the decks. They're making room for Steven Stamkos. I'm of the belief, and I don't have anything to back this up, except for what Stamkos has said publicly, which is his public saying that I want to win with the Tampa Bay Lightning. He doesn't have any desire to leave. He does not want to go to a rebuilding team. He said that in All-Star break. You know, he does not. He has done that. He has been through that with Tampa. He doesn't want to do it again. Now, thoughts may change when money gets dialed into this whole thing, but I am still of the firm belief that he re-signs with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I think he does it before the trade deadline, to be honest with you. But that's just my belief. I could be wrong.
That'd be a blockbuster. That'd be really interesting. The thing I love about Toronto now is now we're just moving the goalposts all over the place.
Yeah.
It used to be that, oh, you know why they'll get Stamkos? Because they won't have to spend a lot of money on him because of all the endorsement deals they'll get in Toronto. And now it's like, you know why they'll get Stamkos? So they can spend to the cap and beyond on this guy because they have all the salary cleared out. So it just seems like we're trying to scramble around and find all of the reasons why I'll end up going there. From a Senator's perspective, I kind of get it.
Yeah, I really get it from
a Senator's perspective. I think Phaneuf is a solid second-pairing guy. I think Phaneuf, you know, at that money is a little bit much, but what are you going to do? That is the salary they're dealing with. That's, to me, the most surprising part of this whole equation is that a Eugene Melnyk team just took on a $7 million a year cap hit for a guy who's 30. So now you have him and Bobby Ryan and Erik Karlsson as the three biggest money earners on the team. But for what they're building and what they need, it's not bad for them.
No, they needed help on the blue line. Yeah. They needed a little bit of a jolt of in the locker room too. I think of leadership in the room, and I think this really does help. You just have to get over the fact that he's making $7 million a year. If you can get past that, and I know it's tied for seventh amongst defensemen in the league with Drew Doughty. You know, Dion Phaneuf making the same as Drew Doughty does not make a lot of sense. Dion Phaneuf making $500,000 more than Erik Karlsson does not, on the surface, make a lot of sense.
No.
But that's the reality. As you said, it's not changing. So get over that and look at the fact that you got yourself a really good 3-4 defenseman. And yes, he's getting paid a lot, but so what? He's a really good 3-4 defenseman. At 22, 23, 24 minutes a night and a number one role in with the captaincy in Toronto on a bad team, that was never going to work for Dion Phaneuf. and he was never going to look good.
Yeah.
Now he comes to Ottawa, and I'm not saying Ottawa's knocking down the doors of the playoffs to win a cup anytime soon, but he comes to Ottawa, he could play 17, 18 minutes a night. He could play second pair. He can hide. He's not the captain. This is so the good years of Dion Phaneuf's career, to me, extended with this trade, because now he can do a lot more. With, you know, he could play easier minutes and less minutes, and he could just do more and last longer.
And always be the second best defenseman of that team,
always.
No matter what. Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think that the leadership aspect is so nebulous that no one really wants to address how important it can be. What is the core? What's the leadership core of that Ottawa team?
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Bobby Ryan?
Bobby Ryan, Erik Karlsson, Kyle Turris. I mean, you're talking about guys who are young in that role, not maybe accustomed to being in that
role. And
have
always been complimentary players. In Bobby Ryan's case, like, he never had to be the man anywhere he ever played.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that Dion's a dick. He's just, that's what he is. And he's an intense guy, and sometimes he seems almost like robotic in his intensity. And that's a good thing, I think, for a franchise that could use that type of personality in the room, and you know, the cliche would be an adult in the room, and he's an adult.
Yeah, I think that to find that out, you just got to go ask some guys in Toronto. Like, ask Morgan Riley what he thinks of Dion Phaneuf. He loves him.
Yeah.
Because Dion Phaneuf he's been a guy in Toronto that's held guys accountable. Now, has he made his mistakes on the ice? Sure. But you know what? That team around him was not doing much better either, okay?
Yeah.
But in the room, off the ice, even on the ice, on the bench, wherever it is, he has held guys accountable. He has been a leader. So he comes to step into this room and really be a leader and help some of the younger guys on this team, bring them along, and make this team, I think, they become better with this trade. Again, forget about the cap hit.
Yeah.
Throw it out. Next season, they're saving money, Ottawa.
Yeah.
Look at it that way,
yeah.
Right? And just realize that for the next three seasons probably, I think Dion Phaneuf is a really good 3-4 defenseman. He's turning 31 in April. He can be a good 3-4 defenseman playing 18 minutes a night for the next three seasons. Then you got to deal with the cap hit on the salary. You figure out what's going on at that point. But you can't think about it like that if you're Ottawa.
Yeah.
You got to think about now.
Yeah, exactly. And from a Leafs perspective, they did a really sneaky thing. Jonathan Willis pointed this out on the Bleacher Report today, the idea that they paired him with somebody who was going to help his stats. And
yeah.
They bought down, and they played him against easier competition. They showcased him.
They did.
And it was a brilliant move.
Well, that's the right move. They knew all along
that
they weren't going anywhere this year. I mean, look, for a while they were playing better than we thought they would be playing under Mike Babcock, but now they're not. And they showcased him in the proper way. And I don't think it fools anybody. I don't think a guy like Brian Murray is going to be fooled by this. He probably knew exactly what was going on. He's probably tried to do it himself. But, you know, it was the right thing to do. And again, I go back to it. I mean, the chopping block that Shanahan has.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, heads are rolling all over the place. And he's doing exactly what he wants to do. He is building this team exactly the way he wants a team to be built. It's slow. It's methodical. It's shrewd. And there's guys, heads are rolling left and right.
Yeah. And my two takeaways from the Toronto side are maybe we underestimated how long this plan was. I mean, I think this really brings it home. If they are in it long haul, we're going to do it right this time. It's not going to be 2 years. It may not be 3 years, but we're committed to this.
Yeah, and I want to see what their next move is. Because there's another one. There's got to be.
They have this war chest, and you just wonder what the end game is going to be. Yeah. I mean, is it going to be a certain point where all of a sudden they get a collection of young players that they're starting to build now, Nylander and players like that, and then they start acquiring the veteran guys and bringing in some money. And it'll be interesting to see what the plan is. The other thing, too, about the trade is I can't remember a player of Phaneuf's nature that, again, has been acquired for a giant bag of stuff you were going to bring to Goodwill. No disrespect to McCulloch, who is still a pretty good player, but Cowan hasn't even proven himself to be a fifth, sixth guy.
No.
The entire list of players, who the hell knows? And then the Flames trade back in the day, it was Stajan and a bunch of guys we couldn't even remember off the top of our heads. It is remarkable to see a guy traded twice in the same sort of way, where it was just like, let's see, we got this sitting here, this is under the bed, I thought I lost this, and then all of a sudden he's a Senator.
And it's amazing, too. That is amazing. But I got to tell you, Cowan and Greening, on a lesser extent, sort of intrigue me. Cowan's got this unbelievable size, and he just hasn't figured out what to do with it yet.
Right.
And he seems like he's a pylon out there sometimes, but he can play.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, if Mike Babcock sinks his teeth into him a little bit, what's that going to do for Jared Cowan? And Greening's got great speed.
Mm-hmm.
He's just never been able to do anything else.
Right.
Like, can they find a role for a guy like that, or are they just, you know, just park him in the minors?
Of the unholy trinity of Tenorti, Jared Tenorti, McElrath, and Cowan, who do you think emerges from that as an actual NHL player?
Wow. I think because they have no choice, Dylan McElrath. they're going to have to use him at some point, although I don't think Alain Vigneault likes to use him all that much.
Yeah.
But he's actually not been bad in the limited time that he's played. And Tenorti I haven't seen enough of. Cowan I've seen enough of to know that what you've seen has not been great. But again, he intrigues me. Just his size he's got to have some ability there that just hasn't come out yet.
On the Milbury scale, in which we give out one Mike Milbury head for a trade that helps out both teams, and then upwards to four where it's a complete fleecing, I would give this one, I would say it's about a 2.5.
Yeah.
I think this is a trade that could really, in the short term, if they can build around him quickly, benefit the Ottawa Senators. They could be up while the Leafs are down in the Battle of Ontario. In the long run, I think you're right. I mean, he's going to be a 35 or 36 year old. Or 34, I forget how old he'll be at the end of the deal, making that kind of money. That could be problematic. But for Carlson plays 30 minutes. You know, Dion's going to have to play fewer minutes, and then I think that'll benefit him. And I think in that role, and let's just whisper this, out of the reach of the Toronto media could also really benefit Dion Phaneuf as well.
I think it's a really good trade for Ottawa in that sense. I mean, look at who they got rid of. They got. I'm saying Cowan and Greening might intrigue me. I mean, Cowan, Greening, Mahalik. These guys, I mean, they weren't doing anything.
Yeah.
It was essentially what these guys were dead money on the cap for Ottawa. And now they got a guy who's going to be a 3-4 defenseman for them for, I think, the next 3 years at good value. And then you look at it for the next following 2 years of his deal. Okay, what's he going to be? I'm not sure. But I like the deal for them. But I like the deal for Toronto because it gives them that flexibility eventually going forward that they're going to need. And it's really, like you said, it shows you this is a long-term rebuild. This is not a quick fix. And I just love the fact that Shanahan has come in wielding his samurai sword, just whacking heads slice left and right.
Yeah, that's great. And then finally, I mean, I know that you as an employee of the league and as a journalist, you can't be wearing your Tommy Abilene jersey tonight.
It's packed away.
To celebrate the Marty Brodeur night. But your thoughts on Brodeur's number retirement and what's now been a protracted year-long celebration of the 95 team and Brodeur's legacy?
Well, I mean, it was a long time coming, just as his Hall of Fame induction will be, and it's great. I love the fact that they did this statue for him. They didn't do it for anybody else, and Scott Stevens was great for this organization. Danico was Mr. Devil. Niedermeyer was great, but nobody, I think, has meant more to the Devils than Marty Brodeur over the, you know, and I think that doing it, honoring him this way is the proper way to do it. Don't make it just one night. Make it a week. Make it a long stretch, a weekend leading into a Tuesday night celebration. And I think it's appropriate for him, and it's great. And it's funny, he sat at the table for this press conference. He said, this might be the last time I have to do this. And I'm like, well, you're going to have to do something at the Hall of Fame. And what if you really do want to become a general manager? You're going to have to do this a lot.
All the time, yeah. So, yeah, for me, I agree. I think people always see, cite Stevens as being the face of those teams. And he came from the Blues.
Yeah.
And Niedermeyer, I don't think, really became Niedermeyer until he won the Cup with the Ducks. I think that really solidified his legacy as being one of the greats. But Marty was homegrown, 3 Cups, and probably should have retired a Devil as well. And I always felt like he was more the face of the franchise than the other two, just by that nature.
You know, it's interesting, too, and Marty pointed this out to me when I talked to him recently. He said, let's not forget about what the Olympics did for him.
Exactly.
I mean, in 2002, he goes and he wins gold with Canada. He didn't win his first Vezina trophy until after that.
Yep.
He said, and he had already won 2 Stanley Cups by that point, but he said the Olympics elevated his profile nationally or internationally.
Yeah.
Because before that, he was just a guy that played behind a trapping team, even though the Devils were the leading scoring team for a year or two there. But, that did a lot for him. But this franchise needed to honor him this way. And I just love the way he's handling it. He's overwhelmed. It's still Marty. Like it's still its calm demeanor. Like take everything in stride, Marty. And I think that's what that's the way you wanted it to be. You don't want him to change for anything. And that's what he is.
Exactly. I get into that with him as well, the Olympics thing, and he refused to apologize for beating the U.S. that year. It was unfortunate today. But Dan Rosen from NHL.com, you're a gentleman and a scholar. I appreciate you coming on and talking about this breaking news today on a day that should be reserved for Marty Brodeur. Gosh darn it, wouldn't you know, Lou Lamoriello decides to drop this bomb in the morning, and be back after the Lemaire interview.